Warning, court radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back. I am your host every Saturday morning right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
Oh, he's so cool.
Man, y'all just don't know.
Listen, YouTubers, what I talked about before we went on their show, keep that to yourself. All right. The people on radio.
Unless you subscribe.
Yeah, if you wanna hear the inside scoop, you gotta watch us on YouTube and like and subscribe, and then the whole world is yours. All right.
Forget everything you just heard.
Yeah.
When you see that.
That was kind of true. Yeah. Never mind. Continue.
Yeah. All right.
Mm. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, firm. How are you, fellas?
We're well. And you?
I am good. I, as you know, I came up from the shore for this event.
There's a new residency, I hear, somewhere.
Yes, I'm in residence in Forked River, New Jersey. Not Forked River. Forked River, New Jersey.
Look it up.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
How did you find this place?
I should have known better. But
he Googled it.
Forked.
There's a story. I was doing my thing at Hard Rock one day, and I felt guilty. Like, oh, the kids, they're always here in the casino with me. Let me take them somewhere. so I got a Airbnb. Airbnb.
Yes,
is that what they call it?
That's what.
Yeah. I got an Airbnb in Seaside Heights, New Jersey.
Well known.
Yeah.
Well known.
Family town.
Right.
A cool boardwalk for the kids. And like as we're driving up, I'm calling the owner of the Airbnb to tell her we're on our way. And she says, oops, I double booked it. I don't have a place for you.
Mm-hmm.
So then real quick, she found a friend who had a place. And I went and went to the friend's place. Well, I don't know if you went down. I went down the shore with my boys for senior week. But this place that we went to as a family was not someplace I would have gone on senior week when I had no money and no sense. This place
was
horrible.
When you say senior, you mean
like
college?
Graduate? No, high school.
High school.
Yeah. This place was, it was dank. It had like black mold. They had the old window air conditioners with things dripping out of it. When you got into bed, it felt moist. It was horrid. So one day we were there and we got to get out. And I knew my friend had a place in Forked River, so I asked him, are you down there? He said, no, keys under the mat, go down and have a good time. So we went, we spent a few days down there, and he's like right on, he has a boat, and he's right on like a little tributary that comes off of the Barnegat Bay. And it was lovely. I had a nice time, and I said, hey, this is COVID time. I said, let's get a place down here. And that's what we did.
2016, 2019.
Okay, yeah. Time. So, we've been there. We've been there for about 7-8 years.
Well, you lost me at moist mattress. I've never.
Yeah. It was not nice. We have a guest in the studio.
Can you hear the laughter, folks?
Yes. It's Keir Bradford.
Joy.
Gray.
Don't leave that out.
Okay, so sorry. let's try that again. Let's try that again. It's Keir Bradford hyphen Gray.
You know what? Thank you so much, Dean. It's always a pleasure being here with you and Manuel.
The joy just cometh in the morning. Welcome.
we're going to get into some interesting topics today. Mm. But let me just ask you, how are you, Keir? I haven't seen you for a little bit.
I'm doing well. Thank you so much,
Where are you working now?
I'm with the Maroon Law Firm doing the civil rights in the civil rights litigation department. I still do some criminal, but not much. Maybe high profile. But yeah, I just had a nice case that we had a great verdict not too long
ago.
Tell
me about it.
That was Christopher Woods. He was the former president of 1199C. And he was being charged by the AG's office for fraud. So we got a not guilty because obviously the evidence in court were different from the narrative in the paper.
Mm.
And it was
sometimes
really good.
That happens, you know.
Mm.
Yeah. So you try your cases actually in court, not in the media.
Truth. But other people try it in the media.
Yeah.
I try it in court.
There you go. Well, we're talking about something involving a case. Where was this case at? In Texas?
Texas.
Yeah, Texas. Speaking of which, not a real place. My kid's up from Texas.
This ain't Texas.
Yeah, yeah. The Carmelo Anthony case.
Not the basketball player.
Yeah. Same name.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Different spelling.
Carmelo Anthony case involving a murder trial down in Texas. How did it go for Carmelo?
Well, it doesn't seem like it went well because he got found guilty.
And what was the underlying facts of the case as you understand it?
See, this is where we get a little hazy because this was a closed case, so media wasn't allowed to be there. So we know the general theme of the case, which was Carmelo Anthony and the young man, and I feel so bad I forget his name because he is deceased and does deserve some respect. Austin Metcalf, yes. Austin Metcalf had an altercation of some sort at a track meet, and where it was said that, you know, there were different accounts, whether Carmelo Anthony was the initial aggressor, but Austin Metcalf actually did physically touch Carmelo Anthony first, and that's when Carmelo Anthony pulled out the knife he had in his bag, and he poked Metcalf in an area where it pierced a bit of his heart. And so he died pretty much on the spot. And it's just deja vu because it sounds just like a case that I had in 2018 with Sean Skellinger in the Rittenhouse situation, where the young man had a knife and it went into the back of Sean Skellinger and pierced a bit of his aorta, where he died, really pretty immediately.
And so what was Carmelo's defense to this, and why is this case important to us in Philly?
I think it's important because people are looking at this optically, right? They're saying, wait a minute, here's a young man that didn't seem to have any issues in the prior to this, had never been arrested, was the captain of some of his high school teams, straight-A student. What would be the reason why he would just flip at a track meet and kill someone? And it just didn't seem to make sense. So people wanted to hear more. And the fact that Carmelo Anthony's defense team never put the defendant who is claiming self-defense on the stand is unconscionable, right? That's number one. But I think, two, optically, the fact that this was an all-white jury trying Carmelo Anthony in a closed case just seems to the inherent unfairness seems to creep up when people are looking at the justice system and saying, wait a minute, who's deciding this man's fate? And I think that this is why it caught so much attention, because all white jury, Texas, don't know what's going on. Defense counsel he's got a all white defense team. The defense counsel seems to know the players on the prosecutor's side, and no one can see what's really going on.
You know, I want to unpack this for a second. There's several things you talked about here. But before I do, let me remind our listeners that if you have legal questions, if you have a problem that you just can't quite figure out, I assure you, if you give us a call today at 215-227-2727, we will figure it out together. That's the number for all things legal in Philly, 215-227-2727. 2727. And if you're on YouTube, all you got to do is post a question, and Ms. Carly will make sure that I hear that question and answer that question. She's very adamant. When she has her little YouTubers, she's right on top of me.
Little all right. YouTubers.
Dang, really? Really?
I need some little YouTubers.
All right. Now, let's unpack this for a second. First of all, usually, one of the things that you don't expect to see is a defendant who has a criminal past testify in his own case, because there's so many things that can come up that may hurt him or her. But when you have no criminal past and some admirable things to talk about, those are usually the defendants who do testify. And in this case, he's claiming self-defense. Who better to talk about his mens rea than the defendant? And by the way, that's, how you're thinking at the moment there. What is it Why is it that he didn't testify?
So that's the golden question. Because even if they thought, wait, I don't like the way he's saying things. One, you have to prep with your client. Okay, you have to really get him to the point where he can relay the information so that other people can consume it the way you need them to consume it. But in a self-defense case, there is no, under no circumstances, I don't see anyone raising self-defense without the person talking about why he was in fear of his life, that he had to use such measures. That is a part of the analysis. And if no one ever hears how scared you are, why you were scared, and what was we call your reasonableness, right? Because when we talk about someone using self-defense, we say objective reasonable. It has to be objectively reasonable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we know your objective and my objective are different. I can walk down a certain street and I may not feel anything. Some people who may be from, where's your beach house?
Orchid River,
New Jersey, may be a little more trepidatious going down in North Philly. And so their objective reasonableness and my objective reasonableness when people approach me have different fears. And that you have to understand from the person's perspective.
Question.
Yeah. Only thing I can think of is that this kid was telling a story that there was just no way to clean it up. Like, he didn't fear, and he was angry from a past encounter, and it just snapped, and he was going to act on that. Like, maybe he was bullied by this kid or others, and this was just the straw that broke the camel's back. And it wasn't fear, but the defense attorneys just couldn't clean that up.
Well, kind of explain, because both of these states, Pennsylvania and Texas, have stand your ground laws.
Mm-hmm.
What is a stand your ground law? You know, kind of explain what that really is.
Well, I thought it had to do with households, not much of just personal space.
No, Pennsylvania had expanded under Governor Rendell had worked on this a while ago. Pennsylvania had expanded stand your ground to include street areas,
okay,
right? So where you're at, you have a reasonable expectation to protect yourself if you believe that someone is going to approach and enact bodily harm, serious bodily harm, or death on you. But it has to be reasonable from the person's mindset in terms of what they were dealing with. Stand your ground really is a situation that doesn't make it to court. Stand your ground is an area where police or prosecutors can automatically say, I'm not going to prosecute you because I see in this situation you had a right to protect and defend yourself. And that is generally doesn't really get seen by people when people apply that. But I'll tell you this, in Pennsylvania, I think we had stand your ground since 2012 now. Mm-hmm. Not one African-American person has ever benefited from stand your ground. There has been several non-African-American people, and this is just facts. Uh-huh. I'm just stating the facts. Several that have. I think there was one where we had a person who owned a gun shop in Philadelphia, and guys came in and they were dressed pretty nefariously. Guys shot him, and that was stand your ground. It never made it to court.
Yeah.
So, you know, so these things don't make it to court. Self-defense is where you have to go through a court proceeding and put your case on in front of a trier of fact, and they determine whether you're guilty or not guilty. But stand your ground, it never even makes it into the courtroom.
215-227-2727. You want to jump in on this conversation or ask any legal question, now's the time to do it. Because as we get close to the end of the hour, we're always left with people dangling on the phone because you called too late. So jump on now, 215-227-2727. Second thing, so one is the failure to testify as the person who's alleging the self-defense. The second thing you mentioned is an all-white jury.
Yeah.
I'm curious how many folks of color were on the veneer. You know, we're on the See, folks, what happens when we pick a jury, there's, you know, if you've served a jury, you know this, there's 40 or 80 or however many they feel necessary to get through so that we get a panel of 12. And in civil cases, it may be a panel of 8. So if there were only one or two people of color in the larger group called a veneer, then maybe it's makes sense that there weren't people of color. But if there were 50% of the people on the veneer were of color and 0% made it onto the actual jury, that's a problem.
Yeah. So what I did understand about the jury selection process is that there were actually three African-American educators, women educators, that did make their way into the jury panel. However, the district attorney struck all three of them using the reason for them being educators. He didn't want educators to be judging this situation. I don't even understand that rationale. However, you know, it was good enough to get over whatever hump they get over. When the hump I'm talking about, you know this very well, Dean, is that we call things peremptory challenges, right? But in a peremptory challenge, you can challenge a juror because you think they can't be fair for some unknown reason. Now, not when they just say, no, I can't be fair. That's a challenge for cause. But if you have some underlying facts that may not make you the best juror, one, you know, the defense counsel or the prosecution can strike you. So you can't strike people based on their race. That's just not acceptable, illegal, unconstitutional, all of that stuff. So sometimes people use certain excuses to strike other what would otherwise be a strike based on your culture and race. And so I do believe this may be an appealable issue. If, in fact, anyone else on that jury had education experience, whether they were an educator before or, you know, has family members that are educators, because the rationale now would be watered down because you're saying these three black women educators could not fairly judge the facts of this case, which already sounds ridiculous.
Translation, they were too woke.
I don't know about too woke, but they may have been culturally sensitive to
Carmelo Anthony. You got a young black male and three black women. The whole maternal thing they're concerned
Absolutely.
About, educated, what, were they high school teachers? Were they in kindergarten, middle school?
High school teachers. And remember, Michael White, I'm going to tell you, I don't know what happened. The gods must have been shining on jury duty that day because we got pretty much eight African-American women on that jury that day. And, you know, it was like I'd never seen that many African-American people participate in jury. And this is where public service announcements. When you get a jury duty call,
please
answer the call.
Please.
Mm-hmm.
Please answer the call.
And sometimes it's just bad luck that you get a panel that does not represent the folks you want on the jury.
And you can ask for another panel.
Yes. Yes. Good luck getting it.
God bless democracy.
With certain judges, they may give it to you.
Good luck. Not on civil cases.
Oh, that's that might be true.
215-227-2727. Let's talk to Joseph on line two.
There he is.
Joseph, welcome to Court Radio.
Welcome, and thank you, Dean. Thank you for the last charity event that you held in Berwyn. I certainly enjoyed it. But to your guests and to all, Manuel and Tactic and everyone, to what the guest is saying, how does that in any way have any common denominator with what we're seeing here in Philadelphia with an individual, parenthetically being that of DA Larry Krasner, trying to pitch criminal reform, and now we have this case in Texas that seems to want to suppress it. So is there any connection in terms of the legal system as to why Texas is kind of keeping it under wraps in terms of not letting it become a reform issue?
Well, remember, Joe, that the court systems are a reflection of the mindset of the
community.
Community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you're going to find very conservative courts in this country and very liberal courts in the country. And so I would say that Philadelphia probably, I know you could correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't practice in the criminal court system, but if you had a choice on where you wanted to try a murder case, I would think Philadelphia would be a better place than Texas would be.
100%. Oh, absolutely.
Yep. And I know as a civil trial attorney, I would rather be in Philadelphia than, let's say, Montgomery County, because it literally is, you know, county by county across this entire country. Some counties you don't want to drive through. let alone try a case in. And it's going to change. And it changes how the judges rule on the cases and on the issues. And it changes the jurors that you're going to get and what the expected outcome will be. You hope for the best and you do the best you can in trying your case. But you certainly, as a plaintiff's attorney, I have a leg up on defense attorneys if we're trying a case here in Philadelphia. Because the jurors are less amenable to corporate America. They understand that corporate America looks out for themselves and they want to make the most profit on the backs of common people. And so they're not coming at this with a sympathy for the corporation. Whereas in Montgomery County, maybe jurors are going to be the guys who own the corporations. And so they're going to be looking
at their wives.
Or the
beneficiaries of something with respect to corporations.
Or their shareholders of that corporation. Mm-hmm. So, each place has its, unique makeup. And in Texas, and especially you're not in Austin or, again, county by county. Is this Dallas or is this, some East Texas or Southern Texas county that you're going to have a hard time going with it?
Yeah. And I want to just remind people, look, we know Larry Krasner has a mindset for different reform. However, the district attorney's office prosecutes people. That's what they do. And so even with Michael White, he was originally charged with first-degree murder by Larry Krasner.
Yeah, he was.
So this wasn't a situation where he saw Stand Your Ground and saw it in a reflection of a larger criminal justice reform issue. It's case by case. Everything goes and moves based on what's going on in the moment. And politics does play a big role.
Oh, yes. That's the other thing, Joe. Politics does play a big role. I don't know if I answered your question, sir, but that's our best.
Yes.
Good.
Thank you.
Love you, Joseph. Take care, brother.
I love Joe. You're a great guy. Take care, Joseph. I know, and we were talking prior to this, I have been following this case for about a year. I saw videos. I saw the social media trends, the threat conversations, and then I didn't see anything. You couldn't find the background that you had seen before. Things began to disappear. And the things that I saw led me to believe that this was a case of a kid being bullied. And as Dean alluded to, had just had enough. These boys, and there were two of them. Austin Metcalf had a brother. They were known to be bullied. They were big kids, too. He had a twin brother. They were over 200 pounds, 6 feet tall. This guy's 5'11", 130 pounds, wet. Yeah. That part was not told well.
Told at all.
At all.
Well, number one, I don't think we heard that from the defense.
Right.
At all. I mean, it just didn't seem to come through. And this conflicting information, because what I understood is they didn't know each other.
Well, they were in this kid's tent. There was a track meet. Right. They're football players.
But they're different schools. A track meet, you have all different schools. So this is a tent that had that kid's school was in that tent. And Carmelo Anthony stopped at that tent. I don't know why. But it was told that they didn't even know each other. So I don't really know what the heck happened. Maybe they saw each other prior at other track meets. I'm not sure.
That was my understanding. At other meets, they had seen each other. Because weren't those boys shot putters or something at the time? That's why they were there?
I believe, yes.
Right, they were football players. Yes. These were big guys.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, he was a sprinter.
Right.
130 pounds wet, little dude, who felt the need, what I was reading, what I saw, based on looking at both sides,
right,
to protect himself. These guys, of course, guys come from an area where, parents teach their kids to lose guns. There were many videos of them target practicing and blah, blah, blah. I mean, but it's a different culture. So it's a different mindset, and that matters, as Dean was alluding to. That area mattered.
And the other thing in the Carmelo case is that he could have been sentenced from, as little as 2 years.
5 years to 99 years.
Yeah, and he ended up getting 35 years. Yeah. If there are mitigating factors involved in it, you would think that you would have seen a sentence that was far less than 35 years. I suspect that on appeal, this case is going to get better for the defendant. I would hope.
I don't, and I can't say it may. So I think 35 years accounts for his age at the time this happened, right? He was 17 years old. So we still have to deal with the fact that he's a kid and his brain is not fully developed. That, the Supreme Court said, you have to use that as mitigation, period. But, you know, here's the problem that I'm having. What I'm seeing, the bits of facts that I am seeing, there were 21 witnesses called by the prosecution who were in that tent that said that Carmelo Anthony was the aggressor. They said he came in there and he started, you know, doing things. And he basically told the guy, touch me and you see what happens. And so the defense said basically that's not a threat. That's a warning. And the prosecution said, do not let the defense say that's a warning. That's provocation. That's basically saying, get, you know, come, let's do it. So it's hard to figure it out.
I don't know enough, you know, to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. This probably never should have been a self-defense case. From the little pieces I'm hearing,
I don't know.
I think that the missed opportunity was to talk about this kid's past and being bullied, and to go to the mitigation. You know, a lot of times when we try cases, it's a foregone conclusion that you're going to lose. But there's some really good, compelling things to mitigate your case that you bring out in sentencing. And sometimes you try your case at sentencing.
Well, it sounds like you can do both. It sounds like you can do both.
Yeah.
You mitigate based on what his mindset is, and then that goes into whether they actually feared for their life.
But that's self-defense. No, that is self-defense. Self-defense is a straight defense. It's not a sentencing mitigation. The law protects people and allows people to defend themselves, right? I mean, look at George Zimmerman. You know, there's the law. Seriously.
Still on the streets.
So we have to make sure that we equally apply the law, right? Because when I tried Michael White's case, I said he's deserving of the protections of the law as well. So if he's faced with fear of imminent bodily harm and death, he is allowed to protect himself. And I do think I don't know, Dean. I do think this should have been tried as a self-defense case. There has to be. I mean, if we're saying that this guy is physically pushing him. Now, we don't know how far it's going to go. We don't know what this young man is thinking in his head. And we don't know their prior contacts. I think it was worth a try to put this young man up to say, what is it that you believed was happening that you needed to use that? And everybody talks about, well, you can't bring a knife to a fist fight. Well, you can in certain situations when you believe that the person's fist is going to knock you out. I mean, that was Michael White.
Yes.
That was George Zimmerman.
Right. And and the difference in size between, you know, that Manuel keeps harping on, which is not to, you know, to be minimized. Right. The difference in size, one could fear for their life. Use, you know, if the other guy is so big and so strong.
High school shot putters from Texas.
All right, we got to take a quick break.
I'm sorry, sir.
That's all right. We got to take a quick break. Folks, we'll be back in 2 minutes. If you've got legal issues or questions, give us a call at 215-227-2727. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, We will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of Urban One Incorporated, Radio One, or any of its subsidiary companies.
More legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Yo, welcome back. I am Dean Weitzman, and this is Court Radio every Saturday morning right here on 100.3. WRNB.
And Classics 107.9. I'm like giving the signal, like, Paul. Keep it going, bro. Keep it going. You got it.
That was cool.
That was all right. It was called drama.
I missed doing this. Acting. Let's do this over again. 100.3 WRNB.
100.3 WRNB.
And
Classics 107.9.
Yeah. Don't encourage me.
I like it. I love it.
Can I take a left turn here on this conversation?
How left are we going? Well, sure.
Not too left.
The forked in the road.
I don't want Keir to be totally prepared for our conversation, so you know, we put those aside for a
paper plane. Paper plane.
Let's do it. All right. Here we go.
I have seen lately something that has transpired in the criminal justice world that I never saw before. And that is a willingness to prosecute parents for the acts of their minor children. Mm. And I'm not saying that it has anything to do with Anthony Carmelo.
Sure.
He was packing a piece, a knife.
A knife.
But I was just seeing there was a seven-year-old, right? A seven-year-old. That was 255 pounds.
No.
Yes. That only ate potato chips and shit junk food.
Excuse me?
Stuff. He got that FCC money. It's good.
Yeah.
Keep going, Dean.
You too.
And 255 pounds, and this child, the seven-year-old child, died from heart disease.
Oh, my God.
And they're prosecuting mom and dad who are in prison today awaiting trial for murder.
Oh, my God.
That's happening now.
It is. And, you know, it's not just that. They're also prosecuting parents for kids who shoot up schools.
Yeah, guns.
Things that they do that are really – you know, let me see.
I kind of like it. Well, I kind of like it. Like, I think that, again, you know, some people may hate me on this, but I think there are people who should not be having kids.
Well, that's always been the case.
So they don't have the emotional ability, financial ability, education, whatever it is, they don't have what it takes to raise a responsible human being in society.
I would take out financial ability, right? There's a lot of people that are pretty poor that are good parents. And, you know, I was raised in a household where we didn't have much.
Me too.
But I would say this. I will say this. Where it fits, I do believe certain prosecutions are warranted. However, there is a system that can take care of parents who need help and who are struggling, whether they got mental health, addiction issues, whatever. And I think a situation that's our DHS systems, right? So where people
which
see,
are being defunded around the world, but,
which is crazy.
Yeah.
They should be extra funded because that is where you really can help at the very beginning before it gets beyond. But what I think in terms of a kid who's seven and that has gained that much weight, that didn't happen overnight. So who was, were
only
doctors?
Only saw a doctor once in his life, had no pediatrician.
But did he go to school?
Did not go to school.
Ever?
Oh. Yeah. Homeschooled?
Because
homeschooled?
Allegedly he had autism.
So he was homeschooled? Spectrum.
I don't know.
Well, if he was homeschooled, now this is going to be a bigger problem. That is a total neglect issue, right? Now, if he's going to school and other people and other educators are looking at him and they are mandatory reporters,
yeah, sure,
they should have reported something is not right in this household.
Well, let me just say this to Dean, and for those who don't remember, there was a time in this country we were very cruel to children. There were no child labor laws. If you had children, they worked from sunup to sundown. Everybody worked. It was terrible for children. The reason we have Girard College is because Stephen Girard saw that white orphans weren't getting adopted. They didn't have the same social activist groups that blacks and others had, so he made Girard College because white kids were orphans, were living on the streets. It was terrible. All these systems you're talking about developed because of child labor laws being developed and the welfare systems and DHS, because we were just a terrible nation to children of any race. But it was worse.
Yeah.
But those same things are now being rolled back because you have people, Dean, that just think, you know what, some folks just aren't worth living.
I got a question for you, Dean.
Aren't valued.
I got a question for you, Dean. Can I take a turn on your show?
You can.
Social media, right?
Yep.
We are now seeing a trend where social media companies, Meta, have been sued and have been found liable.
We have some of those cases.
You do?
Yeah.
I love you for that because obviously my attorney general.
One of
general,
many reasons my attorney loves me. For
exactly. And because you got me why I wanted to run for attorney general.
Right.
I am hugely invested in looking at what's happening with these cases.
Please.
Because I know they have turned children into things.
Zombies.
Mm-hmm. Into things that their parents can't control.
Yes.
And so if you're going to start prosecuting parents for certain things that have influenced
I see you're going.
Children
yes. Yeah, go
in
for
this
it.
Way.
Yeah, baby.
Why are we not looking at this? Because it hurts my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen so many children become succumbed to social media. Their personality has transformed in ways that have made them, their parents can't even control this behavior.
Yeah.
And I just think it's criminal. Obviously, civil definitely needs to pay for some of the damage they have done. But I think certain things can be seen, if a parent's neglect can be seen criminal, them feeding and feeding and feeding with all their endless scrolls and all the things that they are able to access and the addictive nature that they know this has, I think there's something there. There needs to be something there.
Oh, there is. Algorithms that they create for the purpose of hooking you and keeping you in the scroll is a known thing. I mean, they build their platform thinking, how can we make this so that you can't put it down? And so, I believe we're just now, there was one case that came out and was against Meta and you know, many of the other defendants in that process settled before, but some didn't. And we got a plaintiff's verdict out in the West Coast on this. And
were you a part of that?
No, I have one of those cases.
Okay.
It's coming.
Okay.
And so I believe we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. These companies will be hammered for this. And just like tobacco companies had to change, you know, no more advertising. When I grew up,
we saw
on TV
all the time.
You saw the Marlboro Man.
Camel.
Whiskey tastes good like a cigarette should.
Yeah.
And Salem, the Marlboro. We saw it all.
It's always a woman in front of some really nice car.
So people don't remember that.
That doesn't happen anymore. You got all the warnings, and it's going to, you know. So we're going to see that, I believe, with social media and with the video games.
It was even an age limit.
Yeah.
Even the age limit.
And maybe a time limit where, you know, like the company itself tags you and then after a half an hour, you're tagged out for that day. There has to be, because we are becoming a society of zombies.
You're right. Addicted.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
215-227-2727. We have callers. I have to engage here, young man. line one, Angel.
Hey, Angel.
Angel.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. And I want to thank you for being so patient, because you were the first caller to call in, and I apologize. for taking so long to get to you.
Give her a shake.
You are important, Angel. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right, what's your question?
About 20 years ago now, my brother co-signed my mortgage because I couldn't qualify on my own. He has never lived in my house, and he has since passed away. My mortgage is about to be paid off. I'm probably about $12,000 left on it. What paperwork would I need to file?
Well, first off, congratulations.
Yeah.
You have done something that not many Americans can say they've done.
Thank you.
All right. Let's unpack this for a second. First of all, you should have had a contract with your brother that would have recognized that he's on for the mortgage only and that he has no ownership interest. Right. Because just looking at your deed, he's a 50% owner, assuming, you know, you can own a house as joint tenants with right of survivorship.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the way your deed should have been drafted. And then once he dies, it automatically goes to you. And I don't know that it's not that way. It might be, and you might be okay. And then there's joint tenants without the right of survivorship, in which case you own 50% of the house and he owns 50%. So then I have to ask you, when he died, did he have a will? And did he leave his 50% interest to you? And if he didn't have a will, then I'm going to ask you, who were his surviving heirs at the time of his death? Did he have children? Did he have a wife? And if he did, then they're now the owner of the 50% that he owned. So I got questions for you, young lady, mm-hmm. but I don't have answers. Do you want to chime in?
He does not have a will. Mm-hmm. We did not have a contract in place. Yes, he has a daughter, my niece.
Mm-hmm. Does he have a spouse?
I'm trying to make sure. No, he did not.
Okay, so legally, possibly, again, I'd have to see the deed to tell you with certainty. But if it's just joint tenants without the language with right of survivorship, then when he died, his 50% interest vested in his only living heir, his daughter. And so you are now co-owners of your home with your niece. Now, obviously, you know, if things worked out, she would say, Auntie, I know this isn't my house, and let me do what needs to be done to transfer it, in which case it's fairly easy. I will say it will be taxable, though. So you would have to come to our office, and Saul Langsam at my office, who does this kind of work, he would transfer. It would actually be two transfers. It would be one from your brother upon his death to his daughter, and from your niece, his daughter, to you. And those transfers may end up costing you some tax money with Pennsylvania.
Inheritance tax, right?
Yeah. Maybe an inheritance tax or transfer tax.
Oh, okay.
Property transfer tax. So there's some work to be done here, Angel, and you should address it sooner rather than later. Maybe, you know, there may be a little bit of pain involved in it, but it can be worked out. And assuming that your niece is on board with it, it won't be that difficult. But you should make an appointment. Get a copy of your deed, bring your deed into the office, and let us take a look at it so I can give you a more thorough evaluation.
Fair enough. I will. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Good luck, Angel.
Angel, be well. Thanks for calling Court Radio. Have a great Saturday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Do you know that every Saturday morning is like me doing a law school exam?
Okay. I love it. It keeps you sharp, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you feel that way?
It's like I'm not, you know, I didn't come prepared for Angel's question.
No,
and it's nuanced. There's many different layers to it.
And you know that. So that's, I thought it was really good analysis for her to where to start. But you know, you can always have a deed that doesn't have the mortgage holder's name on it, right?
Yes.
So mm-hmm. it depends on what it
well,
is.
Well, and it depends on the mortgage company. They yeah. may insist upon
mm-hmm.
it. So anyway, that is what that is.
Your YouTube is blowing up on a few things about
she went to circle back
tech
or something.
Company.
Yeah.
Being prosecuted. I just wanted to say this, because this is not a far-fetched idea, right?
Yeah.
Doctors are prosecuted for over-prescribing addictive medication.
Yes.
And so when we're talking about addictions that damage your well-being, your mental health, or your physicality, why isn't the same principles apply? Why don't the same principles apply?
Oh, well, that's your bailiwick. You're talking about criminal prosecution.
Yeah.
Because civilly, that is beginning to happen.
Sure.
And maybe the criminal will follow.
It depends on what comes out of the civil cases.
Yeah.
I mean, you may hear some very damning evidence. I mean, I think there were whistleblowers that started some of this, right?
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, it's only fair, because when you add up all the elements, these companies are designing they're designing the program to be more addictive. They're profiting from that design, and they're harming the people that they're going after. And so I think that we're going to see more of that. And we're very careful about the cases we take. The cases we have so far are children only, and children who have gone through mental health crises and have been hospitalized over those crises that involve social media platforms and video games. If you fit that description, as I've just laid out, or know somebody who does, please have them give me a call, because we are actively soliciting clients in that meet those criteria.
Mm-hmm.
We are getting close to our 10-minute time, so we're going to take a 2-minute break. We're going to come back with Keir Bradford Gray. We're going to talk about parents' responsibility for the actions of their children and close out that part of the case or show. Folks, we'll be right back in 2 minutes. It happens every day here in Philly. You're walking your dog or headed to work, and in a split second, you're on the ground in pain because of someone else's carelessness. I'm Dean Weitzman. For over 35 years, My Philly Lawyer has been fighting for people just like you. You can't work. Medical bills are piling up, and you need cash to take care of your family. Slip and fall, we've got you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. Accidents happen. It's that simple, right? I'm Dean Weitzman. Every day someone in Philly takes a fall because someone else didn't do their job right. That's where My Philly Lawyer steps in. You need physical therapy? Check. Need someone to take on the insurance company? Check. You need cash? Check and check. We've been winning for over 35 years. Slip and fall? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. You're cruising down the boulevard listening to your tunes, and bam, some idiot runs a light, messing up you and your car. I'm Dean Weitzman. Bad drivers causing accidents are a fact of life in Philly. Another fact, with over 35 years fighting for people like you, My Philly Lawyer knows how to get you the help you need and make insurance companies pay. Victim of a car accident? Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Well, your hand like skipped a beat there for a second. You got that little shaky thing going. Like,
oh, no, I'm good.
Which one of these buttons do I need to push up here? Good morning and welcome back. I am Dean Weitzman, your host, right here, right here on 100.3 WRNB.
And Classics 107.9.
Perfect. We are joined in the studio by my friend Keir Bradford Gray. Good morning and welcome back.
Thank you, Dean.
Keir is working in the civil rights division of the Marone Law Firm,
yes,
prosecuting civil rights violations all around the country.
Hopefully all around. Right now we're a little in the tri-state area, but we want to go bigger. So you know anyone has a civil rights violation? Oh, you know what? No, we're in New Mexico too. So you know what? You're right.
All right. Mm-hmm. I want to go visit the New Mexico branch of the Marone Law Firm just to check it out, make
sure
it's
a one-person show over there, but we got it.
Hey, listen. Hey. One person is – you planted your flag.
That's all we need.
We were talking about a case in Texas involving a 17-year-old who got into an altercation with another student, resulting in the death of that student through a knifing. And we've been dissecting that case. But in that conversation, we kind of took a turn and we were talking about responsibility of parents and how parents are now being prosecuted around the country a little bit more frequently than they had before, which was not at all, when they engage in behavior or fail to take action that leads a child to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I think parents have a responsibility. You know, when you give your child a car or a gun or some potentially deadly instrument, you have a responsibility to make sure that they're capable of handling it, that they know that you've schooled them, trained them, that their mental health is sufficient. And you cannot, you know, put gasoline and matches in the same room and then act stupid when a fire starts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you join me in that feeling?
I mean,
and you were a prosecutor. You were attempting to become the chief prosecutor for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So you had to think about this.
Oh, I think there are times where it's very appropriate. But I think it's a case-by-case analysis, right? There are some really hard-working parents that are really good parents and really do everything they can. And their kids kind of go off and hang with certain crowds and do certain things that their parents have no idea that it's going on. I just think there's a case-by-case analysis. But you got to remember, Seth Williams was prosecuting parents for truancy. He started that. He started
this
prosecuting parents.
Yeah, I remember that now.
When their kids were seriously delinquent at schools. That became very controversial because there were times where parents had worked overnight shifts and they had their kids and they knew that they were supposed to get ready. They had no other choices but to keep the lights on. And so you started getting some of those that were coming in too.
Right.
You're also getting the parents that say, I watch my kid go to school every day. I drop my kid off. He left. You know?
That was me.
Right? So there were so many variations of this. And it is, I think it is a tool that should be dangled because parents should be doing everything they can to make sure that you're responsible for your children's actions going
into the world. If it's had an effect on parents. Like, are there parents out there who saw that prosecution, I think maybe Colorado, wherever it was, the parents had provided the gun to the
Michigan, wasn't it? Something
okay.
Like yeah, I remember that story.
I think it was both. I think they both had similar
issues. And so parents who provide guns to children who end up shooting up schools when the kids are clearly have some mental health issues, and despite that they put a deadly weapon in their hands and or leave guns lying around the house has that impacted parents? Has that caused parents to change their behaviors and start to think for, oh, man, I'm going to get prosecuted if I do X, Y, or Z, or I don't. And then we were talking also earlier about the parents who allowed their child to eat himself at 7 years old to 255 pounds and died from a cardiac condition because of the weight. We have a responsibility as parents to raise healthy children and to take all necessary precautions. I just don't. I don't know.
There's a movie about that.
Lee I don't Daniels. Have a lot of sympathy for parents who.
Precious. No, Halle Berry character. Her son was overweight.
Oh,
remember,
that's right.
Remember that movie?
Yeah,
he
yeah,
died
yeah.
From
she,
eating
but
like
she,
that.
She, yeah, she won an Oscar for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Monster. That wasn't Monster. It called Monster.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's something that parents have to become. It can, but it can be something dangly. If you say, as a prosecutor, I am willing to go there. Maybe people do start to say a little bit, oh, my goodness. But I tend to think the parents that are really nervous about having any adverse action, whether it's financial or economic, they are the ones that are always going to be, you know, kind of cautious. If you crash my car, I know I'm going to have a huge financial issue.
Right.
But I think there are certain parents that's not going to impact them because of the lifestyle and things that they are dealing with. You're only going to get to them through other systems that have to be routinely involved. DHS, children and youth. Those are systems that are set up to be in your household.
Right.
Making you do things. And nobody likes that.
No.
But, you know, when you have demonstrated you can't do it yourself, someone's got to step in.
Preemptive care. Is it, can we get to the place? Well, right. First of all, preface it by saying, this is where it takes money, and these organizations are being deprived of money. If we want to have if really we care about having a society which is healthier and safer, should those institutions circle through households, even where there's not a reason to have engaged them, for a checkoff? Like, you know how when you come to school, you got to have your vaccinations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So like maybe these organizations come through take the stigma away from it. Take the stigma. We come through everybody's house. We make sure your kids have a bed to sleep in and food and blah, 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 blah. And kind of,
Sounds good, but I don't think practically it would even ever happen. We couldn't even do that practically, right? You've got to go we can't even do it for the households that need it, let alone households that don't. And I honestly, I'm not so sure I need, unless there's things that are signs in my home, I don't need people coming in telling me your cultural way of raising kids versus mine. You know, I may use the belt a little bit sometimes, you know, and you may not
can
like
that. Can you do that anymore?
Capital.
Yes, you can. Yes, that's not capital. That's corporate punch. Corporate.
Ooh, boy. Oh, I'm going home.
You know,
I'm going home to tell
but
Jackson.
I may use it. I'm not saying my kids are grown now, but if I did, what are you telling me that I can't discipline? Not to their, where they're like just, you know, I physically created like whelps and scars on them.
Oh, you know, you'd be giving them a two piece.
Well, you know, sometime they needed something.
I'd love to continue this conversation, and we will on Closing Arguments, but we're all out of time on terrestrial radio, and I have to say goodbye to my folks on radio. But if you want to join us on YouTube Live, you can find us in Court Radio. See you next week, same time, same place.
Proceeding was a paid program of MyPhillyLawyer.com.